Though hard, one can understand and deal with the unconscious of the outer world. How to deal with the unconscious of your own people, especially your own children. That is hard for many people to accept, that your children need to make mistakes, do what they do, create suffering for themselves, and you can watch it, how they're doing it. In front of your eyes, they're creating suffering for themselves, making mistakes, as you call it. And then you want to save them from the suffering. You want to save them from making mistakes. In other words, you want to stop them from evolving and learning. You want to stop them from suffering. And no human being can go through this life without it's an essential part of being human and then going beyond. So to realize, if you had your way, you would create, if you were omnipotent, of course, you would create an ideal situation for your children, an ideal environment, everything right. They're good at school, they do well there, isn't that great? Then they go on to university and they're brilliant minds, and then they meet this beautiful partner and have beautiful children and a nice house, and everything is working so well, beautiful, they're making no mistakes, they're not suffering. What would the end result be? It would be a very superficial family, to say the least, that arises. They would be happy doing their shopping and no suffering has ever crossed their path. They haven't made any mistakes. And yet it's all every human being's destiny to make mistakes, and there are no mistakes. Only from a limited perspective there are mistakes. You never made a mistake in your life. You're here. Whatever you ever did brought you here. Where you hear the message of liberation. So there are no mistakes, only if you adopt a particular perspective, then it's called a mistake. It's limited. It's a fragment of the truth. It's a thought. So, of course, you would want to spare them their suffering, their self-inflicted suffering. And some suffer more deeply than others. I've had parents come to me with extremely tragic stories of what their children did to themselves or others. Dreadful. To the point of saying no human being, no parent could live with that. And yet they do, and there's the learning. And if your child creates suffering for others and ends up in prison, there's the learning. So it's the acceptance of that, allow them to make mistakes, allow them to be unconscious, allow them to create their own suffering. But you can be there not being drawn into it, making it, giving more fuel to that. Allow it. Some children are addicted to drugs. can be very hard for a parent to have a child, and great suffering can be there until finally, and you've tried it all, you've tried everything many times, and it happens again and again, and finally you surrender, and then great love is there. But you allow that movement of unconsciousness. You've done everything on the external level. And then finally you surrender and you allow them to be unconscious. You still help, but there's an inner allowing. So if people close to you are creating great suffering for themselves, are in states of great resistance, inner resistance, it may be that they cannot surrender. Even the word surrender or acceptance, when you say that, they say, what? Are you mad? Accept? You're insane, acceptance. They don't hear. It doesn't go in. And so, in those cases, you surrender for them, so to speak. It could also be to do with a parent. It's not always children. Often it's the parents who are in great suffering. And so, what do? Your mother, your father, you surrender for them. You don't demand anymore that they should be more conscious. You don't demand anymore that they shouldn't be doing what they're doing. You don't demand anymore that they should understand you. You surrender. And then you visit them for Christmas or Thanksgiving, and for the first time, it's not a source of great conflict having to be there for a whole day or 2 or 3 days. Oh my God, not another Christmas with a family. In the surrendered state, no demands are made. Your father, your mother, they display whatever behavior they display and have been displaying for 50, 60, 70 years. Maybe they have the same conversations they had 50 years ago, 20 years ago. It's fine, it's the human mind, nothing personal. And you're simply there as a surrendered entity. So this is already the beginning of, to come back to your question, which I don't talk about usually, this is already the beginning of the end of the world. Because when you identify with form, all the forms are extremely heavy. There's the heaviness, the solidity of the world of form. And as you surrender, the world of form loses its seeming solidity. It's not solid at all, but it feels and looks very solid. And it loses, and that I'm telling you that because that is already something that you can know for yourself, how all the structures lose their heaviness, including the human beings. So there is the forms become less substantial. And that includes the form of my father, my mother, my child, which before was heavy in its egoic density, very much there. And then in surrender, something happens. It's a lighter. And that's the beginning of the end of illusion. That's as far as I'll go. So it's allowing even people close to you, allow them to be who they are in their present. It's not who they are, but to manifest whatever they manifest. And often the change will happen then. Suddenly, how did that happen? I didn't demand anymore that he or she should understand me, and suddenly at Christmas dinner he asks me, so tell me a little bit about these strange retreats that you go to. And he always said before that, why are you involved in these weird cults? You should go into business for yourself. Do something real. Do something with your life. He's been repeating that for 20 years. And you felt angry about that. Why doesn't he... he understands nothing about me. And then surrender happened. And suddenly, oh. Or not. Doesn't matter. I have given up many addictions in my life, and the last addiction, it seems, is the addiction to food. Last night, I sat with the craving I felt, the energy in my body, without attaching a story to it. What happened was I experienced an incredible amount of fear as I glimpsed the power of being free. Please talk more about this. Yes, fear can arise, and that is the egoic fear. It fears its own death. And it's not real. And what do you do with fear? As you enter the surrendered state, you may encounter the region of fear, because the ego fears surrender, because it knows it to be its own end. So as you surrender to a certain condition, inner or outer, and then suddenly there's a pulling back. Don't go there, don't go there. And then you do surrender again, and then you don't... allow the fear to push you out, but you can then allow the fear also to be, and it won't kill you. And so that also, so then you've dropped into that. And when you accept it completely, the very fear turns into aliveness. And you drop down. So whatever arises, there's that. There are many addictions, yes. It's an external manifestation of the mind needing to add something to me. Now, it does that on a psychological level a lot, but that's not enough for the mind. It'll use the body to add to the incomplete sense of self. That's the unconscious impulse behind addiction, and you can see addiction operates in the tiniest things that are not recognized as addiction. Yet you can't stop eating the potato chips. And if you watch the movement, they don't do much. And it goes... It's an adding. You're not a lot of nutritional value. It could be other kinds of junk food. You see, smoking. So food is a big one for many people. It's the... you don't only reincarnate into thought streams, you can reincarnate into food. And for a moment, it seems to work. You feel a little bit more complete after eating a box of chocolates. I spoke to one person who has a big problem with weight, and he said the mind he began to observe his own mind, and it always he came up with one thought that always the main thought that would justify his going to the fridge and eating was, "You've had a rough time. You deserve a break." And of course, every day he was having a rough time. And then he observed that mind movement. He said, "Oh." And next time it came, he allowed that mind movement to be there, and he just sat there with it, without moving to the fridge, because he recognized that. Kindly throw light on the following 2 points. 1. Why one form loves the other form even when the other form does not love the first form. I know what you mean. We know what you mean. Why is love not reciprocated? Why does one-way love traffic situation arise? I'm placing my aching heart before you. Please operate. Thank you. All right, I will begin the operation. Now, one form loves and the other form doesn't reciprocate. Why is that? And the pain that comes with that, great pain for many people, it's enormous pain. Now, you know that the basic condition of the self, or the egoic self, is one of a very deep-seated sense of lack, of not enough, of not complete. And then it tries to fill through strategies. The mind itself tries to fill that lack that it knows and feels almost continuously, except for brief moments, when something has been put in there, and then for a moment the lack is not felt. It never lasts long. So it looks for the next thing, and it looks to the future, it looks to add to me to fill that hole that is always there, where I'm not myself, I'm not complete, I'm not home, I haven't arrived. And so all kinds of strategies are there. And one of the main areas where it looks to fulfill that lack is in the area of relationship, the other person, he or she. And then, when that happens, the entire focus of the self becomes focused on one other person who is perceived unconsciously as the one who is going to complete me, make me whole. He or she is the one. And so almost an obsessive attachment forms to that image, that form of that person. And that is called falling in love. And sometimes, if you're lucky, the other person feels the same about you, that you are going to complete him or her also. And of course that is great. You both feel that you are going to complete each other. And then probably you will want to get married, sign a contract, just to make sure that for the rest of your life you are going to complete me and you are not going to leave me. Because that would have dire consequences if you broke that contract and left me. Don't you even think about that. And then you marry. This is where the films end. The director says, cut here. But life goes on. And you marry, and after perhaps even during the honeymoon, the first doubt comes into your mind whether this actually works, whether the other is going to live up to that enormous task of fulfilling and completing you. And then you start an ordinary existence, jobs, family, and gradually it doesn't seem to be working anymore. The completion, the sense of lack comes back. He or she isn't behaving in the way that he or she should to make me feel complete, make me happy. You read it in ads, I don't know if you read it in India, looking for man or woman to make me happy. Oh, wow. Who could live up to that? And nobody can. And then the lack that was covered up by the temporary delusion that this person was fulfilling you, this person who has a pain body, but you didn't know that, the temporary delusion that this person should be fulfilling you, that suddenly the sense of incompleteness, aloneness, fear, not being just re-emerges. But now, through your mind, you attach that to the other person and say, he or she is the cause for what I feel. You're feeling again the basic egoic condition. You're feeling it more strongly now because for a little while it was covered up by the love relationship. And so gradually the love then periodically turns into hate. And every time the person is not fulfilling his obligations or her, the love turns into aggression, hostility, withdrawal, complete withdrawal. What's wrong with you? Nothing is wrong. Just don't want to talk. Whatever. Or throwing something, whatever they do. And then the relationship fluctuates. For a while it works again. And then it doesn't work. It works again. It doesn't work. And then it becomes, the periods when it doesn't work become longer. And you feel, it feels bad. The happiness of marriage turns into the unhappiness of just coexistence. The happiness of the honeymoon becomes the divorce. And they're all one, really. So it was an attempt to fulfill you through some form, some outer form. And then all that happens in the end, you sense the unfulfillment more strongly, and then you blame that form for causing you that pain. It's egoic pain. This is the pain that arises out of love-hate relationships. Now, the questioner, of course, is not at that stage, because it is one-way traffic, as he puts it. that great love is felt for this form, but it's not reciprocated. What do you do then? Then you feel that lack even more strongly. And it's painful. And there's a tendency for the mind to weave all kinds of fantasies around it, all kinds of stories, and the self gets in there and becomes a very painful self-image of me. And it can then, if it goes on, it can happen that that attraction turns into hate. Can happen. I'm not saying it will happen in your case. And then you see it never was love in the first place. So what is called love is that deep-seated need of the ego. It focuses on one form. So your opportunity now is to feel what you feel as much as possible, get out of the mind weaving stories about it, fantasies, images. Be more interested in that unpleasant, painful feeling. And here is where you surrender. What you're really feeling is the egoic state, the egoic condition. And then the image will come up occasionally of that person. But focus on the feeling. Surrender into that. Accept that suffering. And any suffering that you accept in that way will work for you. It transmutes ego. Any suffering that is accepted completely transmutes ego, resolves ego, and also transmutes the suffering itself. So it's an opportunity. If not now, you would have to practice it. If your love were reciprocated, you would have to practice in a couple of years. You would have a year or two of illusion. That's nice. Second question. This form realizes that some actions are wrong. Still, the form does these actions knowing that they are not right. Why? That's the movement of human unconsciousness. Conditioned, egoic mind structures operate, and they have such momentum that they still operate. The question is there a witnessing presence as they operate and those actions are being performed? Or does the witnessing presence come in after the action has been performed? And initially, as presence arises, it will come in after it's happened. You've gone through an unconscious movement, you've said something to someone, you have done something, and it was totally egoic, totally conditioned, perhaps done it many times before, and millions of other human beings are doing or saying the same thing that you are at this very moment on the planet, performing the same action that you are performing, because it's basically the same human conditioning. In other words, there's nothing personal in it whatsoever. There's no you who did something bad. You is the arising presence. And you watch the movement of unconsciousness, the conditioned. If you watch at first, you can only watch it after it's happened. And then you can fall into the trap of feeling guilty about it and calling yourself bad. The ego loves that. If you can't call yourself good, we said it before, it'll be very happy calling yourself bad, because at least you know who you are. I'm no good. Oh, okay, now I know who I am. Better than not knowing anything, says the ego. So you can watch that and know it is human unconsciousness. And then, as presence arises, you will wake up in the middle of it. And that may happen next time. The same action, the same speech coming out of your mouth. And in the middle of it coming out of your mouth, there's a witnessing presence. And you can see it's like a script, an actor who has been conditioned to perform, to act out that script. And you the same many times before, the same strategy, the same, and now there's a witnessing presence there. Wow. And that is the beginning. This is now when those structures weaken, become less heavy. The moment the witness arises, those otherwise very heavy structures that you could never hope to get rid of unless you enter a different consciousness, a deeper, the non-conditioned, suddenly they got weaker. And then it happens again. It may not be the last time, because there's a momentum to that. And all those other things that you know are there to enhance your sense of self and diminish somebody else's sense of self. Very favorable. One of the favorite ego strategies, the delusions, through diminishing somebody else's sense of self by criticizing, accusing, saying something to hurt. And you know it's wrong. You say it happens. And then in that moment, the self feels bigger because it has diminished somebody else's self. A lot of suffering in human interactions is caused by that. And it's a form of delusion, of course, because you've only strengthened the delusion in yourself through that. And then suddenly, first you see it after the event, and then you see it as it happens. And you look through it, you see the madness of it, that you have only strengthened an illusion. And all those things that are connected with ego structures, envy means you feel diminished in that illusory self because somebody else has or is able to do more than you, has more of this, is better at that, has a nicer looking that, more knowledge, better appearance. You compare, and then you feel diminished, and then you feel hostility towards that entity that seemed to diminish you. It's all total madness, a total illusion. But it operates as motivating factors in people's lives. And then you try to add something to you to make somebody else feel envious, and then feel the self has grown. Are they looking at me? Is she seeing it? Is he seeing it? Or more subtle, as knowledge, spiritual knowledge, even that can be used. Quoting scriptures. You little worm, you know nothing, let me tell you. So all this, always the attempts through mad strategies to enhance one's sense of self. And all those things, I assume you're referring among those. So you hurt other people without knowing it. Create suffering for others in the service of self. And it always seems to work for a little while, and then you feel even worse, and you have to do it again. So the only way to get out of that, and I believe that's the question. So I've just explained why you do these things, that was the question. And that's really all you need to know, and just be there when it happens. If you can't be there when it happens, be there just after it happened. And don't create an additional identity out of that, and just watch. You are not, it has nothing to do with who you are. You're watching unconsciousness in motion, the human condition. And so more presence arises. Even in the midst of it, you will be present. And that is the fading out of all those movements and structures. That's the beauty of it. One more question. The Enneagram is an old Sufi model of the different aspects, qualities of soul, spirit, being, and their relation to different personality types. Have you studied it? I haven't studied it, but I've looked at it. Somebody gave me a book about it. And there are certain models, certain frameworks, there's another word, it's not coming to me, grids, through which you look. Astrology is another one, and there are others, many others. And you can look, and if they work, and some of them are quite helpful, they highlight those areas in which this particular form is particularly where the concentrations of unconsciousness are greatest. And although I only looked briefly, I spent maybe an hour with that book, and I found it very interesting. So it can be helpful because it highlights areas where unconsciousness is particularly, this is the impression I got without really having studied it, the areas where there's particularly strong blockages, unconsciousness, particularly concentrated here, there, in those areas. So by applying that, it can be helpful. You can perhaps see in yourself where you need to look most. So it is not, there's not one of these that you cannot do without. As presence arises, you will see those things anyway, but it can be a helpful additional tool. And eventually, you let go of that. There's always the danger with any tool that people use that they become attached to the tool and believe a way of looking to be some kind of ultimate truth. To mistake a particular, perhaps a temporarily helpful perspective for the truth. Particularly if it seems to work for you, then you get very much attached to it. But any system through which you interpret reality could be temporarily helpful and then let go. This evening we are receiving a visit from Shanti Mai, who has an ashram. She's an American-born spiritual teacher and lives here now, has an ashram nearby, and she's coming with some of her people to perform songs for us, devotional songs, and that may be quite beautiful. That reminds me, there were some questions about devotion, but we may come to them tomorrow. Devotion. What's true devotion? All these, there are these words, but they're all aspects of one state. I have a strong feeling of devotion continuously, there's devotion, not to any one particular thing or form, but when you know your own nothingness, that you're in a state of devotion. It's hard to explain.